Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Salary transparency in the news. Remember, the president signed that order yesterday to let federal employees share their salary information and contractors of the federal government to work against gender discrimination. Well, coincidentally, that happened the same day as we all got to see how much money Medicare is paying to individual doctors. The point of the Medicare billing information wasn't to end the gender pay disparity among physicians, however. It was to bring transparency to the program that provides health care to Americans over age 65. We'll open up the phones in a minute on this. Joining me to talk about this data dump is the Wall Street Journal health reporter Melinda Beck. It was the Wall Street Journal's lawsuit that resulted in the release of this massive amount of Medicare data. Melinda, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
What was the Journal after? Remind us when this lawsuit was filed and why. What were we looking for?
This goes back to 2009, when the Journal first started asking Medicare for a look at what they're paying doctors, individual doctors, and we wanted much more than we actually got. We're still, this data, as detailed as it is, still doesn't give us information on exactly which patients are racking up these bills and in what context, and whether some of these are appropriate use of care or not.
So you were really looking to get at the big policy question of who uses too much health care and what in the system of Medicare reimbursements encourages that. But instead, we got what looks like a lot of dirt on doctors raking it in. At least that's what the newspapers are going with this morning, right?
Well, beneath those figures are many different stories that tell a story of some doctors that really appear to be abusing the system, others that are using the system for what is legitimate purposes in the way the Medicare rules are set up, but still end up making a killing in perhaps ways that are not necessarily appropriate. My colleagues and I spent a lot of time yesterday trying to call around and found really some tales of good doctors and bad doctors. And that's why we would have hoped to get much more data out of this, because you really can see then whether one doctor is billing tens of thousands of procedures for just a few patients, or whether, as one doctor that I spoke to in Ann Arbor, who looked like she was billing for over 200,000 patients, was actually just having to reimburse other doctors who were responsible for all those patients because of a Medicare demonstration project.
And so there can be some misleading results if individuals go on to your database and search it. And listeners, let me open up the phones now, because this is ripe for crowdsourcing. First of all, if you're a doctor with your Medicare billings now open to the world, tell us what that feels like this morning. What do you want patients to keep in mind as they maybe go to the Wall Street Journal site, and the Times has this too, and maybe some other news organizations, and punch in your name and see what kind of Medicare reimbursements you're getting? What do you think patients should keep in mind? Are you doing it, docs, on your colleagues, 212-433-WNYC? Are you learning anything that surprises you? 212-433-9692. And another thing that occurred to us in the office this morning is that maybe it would be interesting to get some snowbirds to call in, people from greater New York, to compare your experience with doctors and your medical bills in Florida in the winter months to those around here. Did you just come back from Florida? Do you come this early, or do you wait for it to get really warm outside? But if you're back as a snowbird, do 212-433-WNYC. Do you see doctors with a different attitude? Where is there more respect for you as a human being? And what about the billing? 212-433-9692. 9-2, as we talk to Wall Street Journal health reporter Melinda Beck. Doctors, snowbirds, other patients, call us up and help us crowdsource this story.
Brian, let me clarify one thing for your listeners. People cannot plug in their own name. They can search for their doctor's name. But one of the limitations of this data is that it's really not broken down by individual patients at all. And even if you are searching for your doctor's name, recognize that there are lots of different factors that can affect why a doctor is showing up as a very high biller or somebody who's gotten paid quite a lot by Medicare. And it could be that that doctor is all of the bills for quite a large practice are going through that one doctor's name.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that that doctor is having to pay up front for some very expensive medication and then get reimbursed by Medicare. There can be some mistakes in there. I spoke to several doctors yesterday who were very surprised to hear how high up on the list of the top reimbursed physicians in their specialty they were, and they said, I don't submit these bills. The company that I work for does, and I certainly don't see $3 million or so in reimbursement. I get a small salary, well, relatively small. So don't automatically think that your doctor is abusing the system if you see some big numbers next to his or her name.
One story along those lines, one of the doctors with suspiciously high billings was actually part of a pilot program in Michigan. Maybe this is who you were referring to before, where she reimburses many other doctors for the care of 200,000 patients, but it's all billed in her name. You talk to
her. Exactly, yes.
So what can somebody learn if they go to your site and search a doctor's name?
Well, you can learn that there are more questions to be asked of that doctor. You can learn that you can see how many unique patients those bills were for. I was on the trail of a couple doctors yesterday, a couple of family practitioners who, as we know, are among the lowest paid in the doctor hierarchy. They had submitted bills for, only 38 or 56 patients total and had billed something like 70,000 different claims and were reimbursed several millions of dollars. That's a bizarre pattern. So if you see something that seems that far off, that would be a good reason for checking.
And maybe something that we can learn, although it just may reinforce what we already know, is which kinds of specialties tend to rake in the bucks. There don't seem to be a lot of primary care physicians or pediatricians high up in your list. You have a chart in your coverage that splits the reimbursement into fees for work and reimburse expenses. Ophthalmologists came in second either way. Nephrologists bill the most for work, while radiation oncologists top the list when expenses are included. So what do you know about those practices that explains their positions?
Remember that this is Medicare. So
There aren't going to be any pediatricians. Right, fair enough.
Although
I think if we were looking at private insurance, I would think that it would come out the same way. But still, a good point about this being Medicare.
Although even there, a lot of finances do get funneled through the Medicare system. If you are on full-time disability, you may have some underage patients being billed through Medicare. But that does kind of help explain why some of these specialties are so high up in that pecking order. A lot of the ophthalmology patients and things that go wrong happen in people who are 65 and older. And in ophthalmology especially, there are a lot of extremely expensive drugs that these doctors have to pay for in advance. And a lot of these procedures can be done really very quickly. So it's not all that uncommon to have a single doctor be injecting a very expensive medication into 25 different patients with ophthalmological disorders in one day. So that can really add up quite a lot. And it's true that some of these very expensive drugs do give some of these doctors some rebates and some other kinds of perks for ordering them. So even though it sounds like it's all up and up and it may be under Medicare rules, even within those rules, there is some opportunity to enrich oneself through Medicare.
Let's take a call. Ann, MD in Westchester. Ann, you're on WNYC. Good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay. I'm not an MD, but I have for 16 years been handling all sorts of billing issues. And let me say that, first of all—
Sorry, just so I'm clear. Do you work in a doctor's office?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, sorry.
And let me say, first of all, I heard you say before, talk about what you are being charged. You have to be clear with Medicare patients. Talk about what your doctor is being reimbursed. Because in our computer system, I could put $1 million for the charge for an office visit. And Medicare will reimburse 80% of, for depending on the level, say $85.72. So it doesn't matter what I charge. It matters what Medicare pays. That's number one. Number two is there are, I believe, regional differences in the rates. So in Florida, it's based somewhat on the cost of living. Now, when we're talking about raking in the big bucks, which was the expression you used before, I have to object. Let me point out several things. First of all, when I started doing this, if a doctor did the act of drawing blood and, you know, spinning it and sending it off, that part of it, venipuncture, was reimbursed a few dollars. I believe that few dollars went down, but it certainly didn't go up. It has been, for as long as I can remember, $3. That doesn't include the office component of the visit, but $3. Presumably there's a staff, there's equipment, there's, you know, paperwork, et cetera. $3. Sequestration happened, and across the board, the government took back percentages, I don't know, I'm not so good with arithmetic, but percentages across the board on doctors' reimbursement. That $3 became $2.94. Sequestration ended. That $2.94 has remained $2.94. Now, when
Anna, I totally get your point. I'm going to stop you there. It is a little troubling that a billing officer at a doctor's office isn't good with math. No, I'm kidding you. but I totally take your point. And so Melinda Beck, health reporter for The Wall Street Journal, we don't want to fall into the trap of media amnesia, the thing that makes us go, oh, look at this today, makes us forget the thing that made us go, oh, look at this yesterday. And yesterday, figuratively speaking, everybody was wringing their hands about low Medicare reimbursements that are getting lower and are going to drive doctors out of even accepting Medicare in the Obamacare era, et cetera, et cetera. So what's this disconnect, and can you connect them between low reimbursements under Medicare and these high billings by some doctors that are making the news today?
Well, there's so many different layers to that question, but let me just tackle one that your caller brought up. There is a huge gap between what these doctors are billing Medicare and what Medicare sends back, and you can see that in this data. Some of these doctors billed a total of $18 million to Medicare and got back $3 or $4 million. And the trouble is that those billings are really kind of fictitious. They're kind of like the Chargemaster prices that we've heard about with so many abuses from what sound like abuses from hospitals. But as it was explained to me, by law, doctors cannot bill Medicare less than they're billing private insurers. And Medicare, as the caller pointed out, pays back set rates no matter what the bills are. So do insurers. So those high billers are not necessarily the same as the high recipients. And I think what really is startling people with some of this data is that not only are these doctors billing Medicare a lot for these sort of fantasy rates, but they're also receiving back tons of money. The highest biller here, an ophthalmologist from Florida who has been under investigation in the past, received more than $20 million in Medicare reimbursement. So that's still a lot of money there. And as to your question about some doctors not wanting to take Medicare patients, we do hear that all the time. One thing I heard from several doctors yesterday is that one reason they're on here looking like very high recipients of Medicare patients is that they are taking Medicare patients and taking quite a few of them, where many of their colleagues in the region don't. And it's funny, you do hear doctors say that, oh, Medicare reimburses so low. Everything is relative. Medicare still reimburses more than Medicaid does. And in many cases, Medicare is reimbursing more than some private insurers are now because private insurers are trying to cut costs too. So what may seem like, you know, a pittance from Medicare in some situations, you know, is a pretty good, reliable payment in other situations.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River, New York and New Jersey Public Radio. As we look into the Medicare document dump, which shows billings or reimbursements really to many doctors around the country, searchable on the Wall Street Journal website. The Journal filed the original lawsuit that led to the release of this data, though you've been hearing health reporter Melinda Beck from the Journal and some of her caveats about using the information that you might find there when you go to their site and plug in a doctor's name, but also what we're learning from this document dump so far. And Anjali in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Yeah. Hi, Brian. I'm glad to be on the show. You know, I don't know a ton about. I'm an ER doctor in New York City, and I'm not going to say where. But in my own hospital, you know, I probably work in what I've heard is the most litigious county in the entire country, and I can only speak from an emergency medicine doctor's perspective. But I definitely have seen other doctors be egregious in their practices in terms of ordering lots of tests that I don't really see have a meaning. You know, we also on the show last week, there was the thing about Mount Sinai and the catheterization lab.
Right, and how many procedures they do, and some doctors at satellite clinics that have financial relationships with the hospital seem to refer tons of patients.
Yes. So, you know, I try to practice medicine very judiciously. However, you know, I know other people, and I don't necessarily blame them. You know, I have friends that are being sued because a young person required a lumbar puncture to rule out a diagnosis. They're 19 years old, and then filed a lawsuit for chronic back pain as a result of that procedure, you know, and it was necessary. And if you miss any diagnosis, it's completely unacceptable, you know. And so it's trying to find a balance with patients. They want their doctors to do everything. You know, I have patients coming with the flu and cold symptoms all the time, and I say, guess what? There's nothing I can do. You just kind of have to live with it. And they're like, how did I pay so much money for just that, you know? But I've also seen doctors run a bunch of tests that are totally unnecessary, you know. But if you miss one thing and you didn't run the test, forget it.
So what do you think the solution is, Anjali?
You know,
and can the system be set up in a way that moves us toward the optimum so the people who need treatment can actually get it and doctors are reimbursed for it, but that there aren't the incentives to overuse?
You know, I'm not as liberal as they come, and I don't necessarily believe in tort reform per se. I do believe in getting rid of frivolous lawsuits. And as a doctor, my personal preference is to just practice good medicine where patients get what they need in a timely manner. And I wish I knew how to create a system. Right now in New York City, 20 hospitals have closed in the past 10 years. The city population is growing. There are not nearly enough, and it's not even physicians. There's enough physicians. In an emergency room, there's not nearly enough ancillary staff, meaning nurses, techs, all of the other things that need to be done for anybody to practice medicine safely. I think people need to realize that not everybody can have everything. There has to be some type of reasonable, you know, miss rate. And then we also need to decide how to incentivize doctors to go more into primary care, because where I went to medical school, almost the entire 170 went into subspecialties because that's what reimburses more. And I'm somewhat kind of disgusted by how much subspecialties get reimbursed.
Absolutely.
You know, based on orthopedists who put in all these fancy things and surgeries that are done that haven't proved to have any efficacy whatsoever, yet patients insist that they want it to be done, like the back pain surgery, all of those things. You know, many of them have no studies proving that there's any reason to do them and that there's any reasonable cure rate with any of those things.
And we all pay for it as a nation in terms of how healthcare is taking over the economy and Medicare faces, if not ruinous pressures, unbelievably inflationary pressures, and with the baby boom and et cetera. And that's why we're having this whole national debate about Obamacare and everything else. So much at the root of it is what you say. And I thank you for your call. So, Melinda Beck, Wall Street Journal health reporter, are there policy implications of the data that your lawsuit has produced, this Medicare document dump that the Journal sued to get? Are there policy implications that you're able to see here after the first 24 hours of going through a gazillion documents?
Well, I think we and every other media organization and many policymakers and private hospitals and doctors are going to be poring over this data for months and months, looking at things that really should be fixed. And I think one of them should be right away that the drugs that a number of these doctors are billing for within the physician payment universe should be taken out, and there should be more economies of scale there and less incentive, really, for doctors to be ordering these really super expensive drugs for their patients.
So can I take an example of this?
The more you can have market competition, the better.
Right. So can I take an example, even though it comes from Brand X, the New York Times, which focused today on the use of the drug Lucentis used to treat macular degeneration, which can cause blindness in aging eyes. It's a very expensive drug that has to be used in perpetuity, my understanding is. There's a less expensive option, but it has to be used off label and more often. Do you expect more to come from Medicare on its use? Is that a good example of that, of what you were just talking about?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And frankly, these are sort of big systemic changes that will probably take quite a while to get through Medicare. They've got so much else going on right now. I'm still trying to bring about all of the changes under Obamacare. And the kinds of changes that we're talking about have to do with more deep in the bureaucracy. But I think that you will see more fraud prosecutions on the basis of what's in some of this this data. A number of the doctors that we saw as outliers had already been the targets of Medicare fraud investigations, but some of them had not been. And that's really why we were trying so hard to get this data. I think there's just a wealth of stories of all kinds embedded in here, and this is why you need some sunlight, particularly right. On these big government, incredibly expensive programs, because there's a lot going on that's not above board and a lot that just could be improved.
So should an aging patient with early macular degeneration take from this that they should at least get a second opinion if a doctor recommends that they use Lucentis because the financial incentives may be skewing that doctor's recommendation?
Well, yes, that would not hurt. And because Medicare patients, even privately insured patients, haven't been having to pay these costs themselves, there's really been less impetus for patients to say, well, wait a minute, why is it so costly? How much are you making out of this? But the more we're all having to share some of these costs, particularly in the private health insurance world, premiums are going up, deductibles are going up, out-of-pocket costs are going up. It really does behoove patients to not just take their one doctor's word for, oh, this is the best thing you have, and yes, it's costly, but you don't have to pay for it, so don't worry about it. Ask questions.
One more call. Connie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Connie.
Hi. The analyst in me is coming out. I wondered to the guest, if there were, if they broke down the data by Medicare versus Medicare Advantage, and if there were any appreciable differences that emerged in terms of doctors' billing or costs.
Right. Now, this is a really interesting political question because Medicare Advantage is the private plans that the Republicans like to push, because they would like to see a kind of privatization of some of Medicare, getting it out of the government bureaucracy, seeing if the private sector can manage Medicare patients more efficiently and make money on it at the same time. But Medicare Advantage, correct me if I'm wrong, Melinda, has turned out to lose money by and large, and the federal government, our tax dollars, have had to subsidize these Medicare Advantage plans so far. And Obamacare is intended in part to cut down on the use of Medicare Advantage, even though it gives the patients who sign up for it some extra benefits. It's not seen as cost effective. But the Republicans love it because it's an experiment with the private sector. So do I have the politics right? I assume that's why Connie is asking the question. And do we learn anything about the success or failure of Medicare Advantage by looking at your data?
Not from this data. This does not include Medicare Advantage. And that was one of the failings of the data that and why we wanted more. So it's not possible to make any comparisons that way. And yes, lots of political overtones and disputes going on in Medicare Advantage. For one thing, the Obama administration wanted to help fund Obamacare by carving about $500 million out of Medicare Advantage over 10 years, but that really squeezes the amount of money that private insurers have to spend on those patients. And they've been, because they still need to make a profit on these Medicare patients, they've been dialing back which doctors they can see, which procedures they can have. So you've got lots of countervailing forces here, and it's one more example of, you know, squeezing the balloon. You tighten up on one end and cost balloon out the other end.
Medical whack-a-mole.
Right.
And we leave it there with Melinda Beck, health reporter for The Wall Street Journal, looking through this massive Medicare data dump that was the result of a Wall Street Journal lawsuit. Can you give us a tip? What's your day three story tomorrow?
Can't tell you that.
All right. Well, keep digging.
Okay. Thank you.
And listeners, we will refer you to their site where you can do your own searches of doctors. But as we've been saying, be careful of the interpretations of what you may see, because you'll see some numbers that may not tell you that your doctor is, you know, raking it in or unfairly raking it in or anything like that. But we'll keep looking to the professional journalists as well to interpret what they're learning. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Still to come, is the current turmoil in the Arab world a second Arab awakening or just a reshuffling of who has power? We'll ask Jordan's former foreign minister, Marwan Mawasha, and we'll preview Mayor de Blasio's first 100-day speech that he's giving this afternoon and dig into the Al Sharpton FBI story, a rat or a cat. And what was the context of what happened so long ago between a young civil rights activist, the FBI, and the New York mob? We'll talk about that with Mark Riley. Coming up, Brian Lehrer on WNYC.